Picture this, two guys trapped in the South Charleston Public Library. One guy loves movies, the other, well, he'd rather be watching reality TV. Can they survive each other's favorite films? Find out on Real Opposites, a library podcast about movies, hosted by Josh and Aaron from the South Charleston Public Library.
Hey guys, and welcome back to another episode of Real Opposites. I'm Aaron.
And I'm Josh.
And we're here to talk about the movies that we recommended for each other in the last podcast.
This week, I recommended to Aaron that he watch the 1976 classic Taxi Driver, directed by Martin Scorsese.
And I recommended my friend Dahmer, a movie about Jeffrey Dahmer, and it's based on the graphic novel from Durf, Back Durf. It was one of his friends in high school.
And I happen to really like my friend Dahmer. Honestly, the best movie you've pick for me so far. I do think, like what I mentioned in the last podcast, that they actually are somewhat similar. They're both like character portraits, troubled and disturbed individuals. My friend Dahmer's not as good as Taxi Driver. It is very good though. I like the God's POV. It doesn't really take any side, you know what I mean? It's just kind of on the outside looking in, almost like a documentary.
Yeah.
I really appreciated that it's not trying to pull you one way or the other. It's just presenting largely what seems pretty accurate, because I watched a documentary about Dahmer after the movie, and it seems pretty close to what actually happened.
Yeah, and that was a neat thing I liked about it is I had read the graphic novel, and then when the movie came out, I watched it, and they pulled from it, I mean, basically what he had written.
Yeah.
And it was almost like a non-biased opinion of Dahmer. Of course, this was before the killings, but it was from another student's perspective.
Yeah.
Which he kind of gets tangled up with Dahmer. They create that Dahmer fan club and have him do different things. Just kind of, it's almost sad in parts because they were using Dahmer for comedy.
You see, one of them starts to feel kind of bad at a certain point about like that they're just kind of using him for sick entertainment in a way.
And exactly.
It kind of goes too far.
It also touches on some of the weird things that he did as a kid, like the shack of bones and animals that he had and roadkill. But it does give you that portrait of he was also a human, and there were things in his life that, you know, affected him, his parents, his mom.
Yeah. Also, I read that she was taking LSD or something. She was taking drugs while she was pregnant, and I think that may have caused some sort of chemical imbalance in it.
She was taking drugs when she was pregnant with him, and then also she had a lot of issues herself.
And then
of course it caused issues between her and his dad and things like that.
I thought Anne Heche was very good at playing the mom.
Yeah,
she's very believable. I mean, I don't know what she had, maybe bipolar or something. She seemed to swing really wide, and thought she was really good. Also, it's like that element about how the marriage affects him.
Right.
Kind of reminded me a little bit, like that's kind of what E.T. is about. This is an odd segue.
Okay.
That's kind of what it reminded me of. Well, because, you know, E.T., it's largely about the child coping with the divorce of his parents.
Right.
It's kind of what Dahmer kind of does, is he kind of throws himself in with these quote-unquote friends he's found. Mm-hmm. And that's how he's coping with it, because earlier in the film, his father takes away his shed where he was dealing with roadkill.
Right. You know. Yeah. And where you mentioned taking away the shed, I think that was almost like a pivotal point for him, where then he didn't have that shed to put his curiosities to work.
Yeah.
I guess you could say, whereas he started like slaughtering animals in the woods. And you can see him start to slip into the thoughts of killing humans as well.
Yeah.
And it almost makes you wonder, like, what if he had that shed? What if he just stuck to, like, the roadkill?
Yeah, what if a person doesn't have an outlet for their emotions and their rage, and they just pent it up, and then they kind of let it out in a way that's not really productive?
Right.
Like, he could have stayed in the shed and learned more about biology and maybe become like a veterinarian, and nobody would have ever been killed by Jeffrey Dahmer.
Right, exactly. I mean, it almost makes you think, like, the taking away of the shed, but also where his parents were having issues when they split, he basically ends up living on his own before he's out of high school. So he is just living in this house by himself, no furniture or anything, just living there. and also not having his shed, I think that's when you start seeing him turn towards like killing other animals and thinking about humans. So it was kind of interesting to see the way it is affected and the things that he went through before he ever started killing people.
That's what I liked about the movie, is that it's not really about the killings. So that's kind of really been covered. It doesn't even glamorize what happened beforehand. Like, it represents it. But I like that the movie ends on a very somber note as his first victim enters the car and they drive off. If you know what happens after, it gives all of his murders much more weight.
Right. You know? Yeah, and that's what I liked. They didn't try to stretch this movie at all or make it into something it wasn't. It was Durf's, which is the guy that did the graphic novel. It was his version of what happened in high school with Jeffrey Dahmer. And they didn't try to take this movie like they would with some books and make it into something it wasn't. It really was, just like you said, a portrayal of here's what it was. Not trying to pull you in either direction of how you would think.
Yeah.
But I do think there were a lot of emotions that could come from it, depending on how you view it when you watch it. But that's why I liked it.
Yeah, pretty great little movie.
Well, I guess that brings us to your movie, which was Taxi Driver. And I wouldn't say I liked the movie, but I did like some of the story plot to it. And like you said, the movies were kind of tied together on accident this time around. But you have Robert De Niro, who plays Travis, and he's just a normal guy. But as the movie goes on, you see him like slipping into a lot of insomnia and like a descent into madness a little bit throughout the movie. I did like how the movie does like those monologues where you're inside his brain.
The notes he's writing. Thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's writing them back to his parents.
Right. I liked that part about it because it gave you that character build that I like. So you really got to see that character. He just starts out like a normal guy, but it starts getting to him and things that are happening keep building on him. I will say I did find him a little creepy. Sometimes a little cringy.
Oh, yeah, he's supposed to be. Absolutely.
Right. But I think a lot of that is another thing with some older movies. Sometimes it has these themes or words or things that we probably don't use today because it is an older movie, but was just normal at that time. And they're trying to portray a part of New York and a time in New York where that's how it was.
Yeah, the 70s in New York was like a hellscape. It was like a wasteland. It was dystopian almost. Right. The movie presents that. He starts off socially awkward, just kind of, you know, and he's continually pushed outside.
Right.
And left alone. And that's really what the movie, like the movie is an examination of what society does to someone who doesn't quite fit in to everything.
Right, exactly.
One of my favorite parts of the movie, and I think it kind of encapsulates the whole movie, it's Travis sitting in his apartment with the 45. He's like scratching his head.
Is that the same time he's kicking the TV?
Yeah, when he's like rocking the TV on its edge. And I think it's like American Bandstand, I guess.
Yeah,
it's playing. So. And there's a very specific song. I can't remember the name of it. But that scene, the TV is his mental state.
Right.
And he's kind of society rocking it back and forth. And then eventually he rocks it too much and it collapses.
That
explodes.
That's true. The way you're putting that scene, I can see that now. It kind of was a pivotal point for that movie where things had been building up. And I think this is after Betsy, his love interest.
Yeah, yeah.
Just, where he took her on a date. It didn't work out. He kind of stalked her. I don't know. That's why.
He does.
When it comes into that part, that's where I really found it a little cringy because he was kind of stalking her before he even talked to her. But, I mean, it is what it is. When it gets to that scene, he's already had the insomnia, a little slip into madness. He's talked to this girl that he really liked and then lost her. And it's just one thing after another.
Yeah.
And plus just dealing with the way time was then and society pushing people out. It ends with the crashing of the TV.
Yeah.
That's about the middle of the movie where it turns.
Yeah.
And then you start seeing him turn as well.
Then he kind of becomes infatuated with a Jodie Foster, like a 13-year-old prostitute. And he wants to play the classic American, like John Wayne.
Exactly.
Wants to go in there and rescue her.
Yeah, he talks to her a couple of times. Mm-hmm. Iris. What's her name?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's her pimp that is constantly trying to get people in for her specifically. And she was 13, I think. And that he tries to talk to her and he's like, you need to get out of here. This person's not a good person. He is the good guy. So I thought it was interesting that, for me, in the first part of the movie, I found him very cringy. But then after his descent into madness a little bit, he's the good guy, yet he still goes about things probably not, like, the best way.
He has, like, this idea of American heroism.
Right.
Is stepping in where you're not really wanted, and just, like, he just knows violence. You know, right. Like, the movie starts, and they mention he was in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And probably likely has undiagnosed PTSD,
right.
Serious mental disorder, which kind of sets up who he is at the start of the movie and where this is all eventually going to go. After he rescues Iris at the end of the movie,
right.
The media does what it does best and ignores any issues he might have had and treats him as if he's John Wayne running in
exactly
into the American situation hero. When he's instigating this horrible violence at the end of the movie.
Right. Which you kind of see him, before he goes in to save her, he buys his gun illegally, so it doesn't have a serial number and all that. He kills somebody that is shoplifting.
Yeah.
Which, right, I mean, good guy thing. But then Betsy worked for somebody running for president, and he goes to that rally and is thinking about, or it looks like he's thinking about shooting that guy.
Yeah.
Because he's, like, coming through the crowd. He reaches for his gun, but then one of his people, his security, I guess, sees him, mm-hmm. and then he takes off running.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he had this violence in him, whether it was going to be good or bad. And it ends up being he saves somebody, and then, like you said, the media comes along and glorifies it and doesn't talk about anything else he was doing, just the fact that he saved somebody, which was kind of interesting to see. I mean, it kind of ends in a happy note in the fact that it seemed like he fulfilled what he needed to with rescuing her, and he seemed to be doing a little bit better.
He gets out this rage in a way, but it's not really a healthy expression of your emotions. So at the end of the movie, he is getting in his taxi, picks up a fare. He adjusts the rearview mirror, thinks he sees something, and the music has like this kind of like sting, mm-hmm. and it's he's seeing himself, and he's never going to let that go. He's never going to not have that in him.
Right.
And a lot of that is just kind of a reflection of what's expected.
Right, exactly. And it's neat that it dives into that, and it does show it throughout. It's just kind of showing you what's expected of him and how he reacts to it. Where we were talking about the violence at the end, I will say it seemed like over dramatic, but I think that was the point of it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some of it was, I mean, me being me, some of it just was kind of funny to me. But I understood, like, the power in the moment as well. Some of it was just over the top and kind of funny, I thought. I really liked at the end where he's already killed everyone. He's got up to Iris or Jodie Foster, and she's hiding. He's already been shot, like, once or twice at that point.
Yeah, he's several. He's bleeding out.
Yeah, he's bleeding out, and he sits on the couch, and the cops come in, and he does, like, the finger gun to his head.
Yeah.
And they show that real slow, and, like, he dies.
Yeah.
So you think.
Yeah. It's this very methodical, slow-motion overhead shot, showing you the volume of the violence.
Right, exactly. It kind of shows you the aftermath of everything. Yeah. And then just that slow ending with him, which I thought was going to be basically the ending of the movie.
Yeah.
Because I assumed he died at that point. Because, like I said, he'd been shot 2 times and then was shot another time or something. Yeah. So he was bleeding out. But the way that was shot, especially after all of the violence, which I kind of found a little comical, I really liked that scene for some reason. Just where they do that overhead, show you kind of what happened,
mm-hmm.
and then that the finger gun, I really enjoyed that. I don't know why.
That's the thing. It's an indelible image.
Right.
It's the kind of thing that I don't see a lot in movies anymore where you're never going to not remember that image.
Right, that's true.
That was really, I mean, the 70s were like the best time for movies, really, because we were coming out of Hollywood that was pretty much dead and buried. They had sunk all their money in these expensive epics that all pretty much bombed at the box office, and they had to turn to these younger guys like Scorsese and Spielberg and Lucas and Coppola that brought like the French New Wave into an American sensibility, and movies became more personal, more intimate. There was less opulence, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, things were more at a ground level. Even something like Jaws, which is a big entertainment, is really, it's a character piece about three sides of an American male.
Right.
You know, like you have Brody and Hooper. Yeah. And Quint. So, I mean, Taxi Driver is Scorsese's second or third movie. I can't remember which, second or third. And it just shows how early on he just had such a command of what he wanted to say.
Right.
And it kind of encapsulates that whole period, especially in New York. There's a texture to the movie that you just don't see.
Yeah, and that's what I was saying, where some of it seemed kind of creepy or cringy to me. You also have to overlook that fact, because it was a different time, and it was trying to portray and give you that texture, that visibility of how time was then, and the type of area that they were living in, and just how things were. But I also think you were talking about that pent-up anger and his rage and how he ended up releasing it, and he seemed better once he got it out. And I mean, of course, that was killing some people.
Yeah,
it kind of circles back around, and that's kind of how these two movies were related, in the fact that, just like we were talking about Dahmer with the working in the shed and his pent up anger, and what if he had done that. So I think both of them kind of did a good job at showing a timeline of how someone reacts to different things in their lives.
And they're both very lonely people,
right?
Yeah, you know, it's like they're very awkward socially. They don't really have any friends. Like, even, you know, Travis, he tries to confide in Peter Boyle, one of the other cab drivers.
Right.
And I think Peter Boyle and the other cab drivers are kind of written as one dimensional, as a reflection of what society does to an individual. Like, it's just turning you into a number. Like, you're just a cab driver. So,
right.
You know, you have a gruff exterior, and you just kind of say a lot of the same things over and over. It's like a mundane existence. And
right.
Travis is the outsider. He doesn't even fit into that.
Yeah, I think you're right in that sense. You could see he would try to talk to these other taxi drivers, but even there, he didn't fit in. So they would listen, but they wouldn't actually. He couldn't even make a connection with the other taxi drivers.
Yeah.
He was different than even all of them.
The only one he really sees to have a connection to, because, you know, as much as he pines after Cybill Shepherd earlier in the movie, she's, again, kind of a reflection of just someone who's just in the rat race, trying to do better at their job and just, you know, avoiding any kind of complexity in their lives. And the only one he can actually relate to is Iris. You know, and they're both trapped in a way.
Right.
And I think, you know, maybe that's a way for him to get out, get both of them out, is what he's going on in his head. It's completely wrong.
Right.
You know, it doesn't make any sense, but it makes sense to him.
Right, exactly.
And thank you. I just like the way that the movie expresses that. It doesn't beat you over the head with it. It's just done with performance. And most of the best moments in the movie are the quiet moments.
Mm-hmm.
There's a moment even early on showing how awkward he is, where he's at a payphone trying to talk to Betsy, Cybill Shepherd, and he's trying to make up for the bad date they had.
Right.
And even the camera is so bored with him that the camera shifts away to go down the street.
Yeah, that was one thing I was going to ask you about. And now the way you're talking about it, I see that. I expected something to happen.
Yeah,
it's the way, like, it was done. And then I was like, oh, that's just that scene.
Travis in that moment's kind of, he's BSing Betsy, you know?
Right.
So if the camera's sensing, like, there's no truth there, so it's moving away.
Right.
You know? So, like, with regards to what we were talking about with, like, Travis is kind of a reflection of the American psyche of the time, like, the male psyche of that period.
Right.
Kind of reminds me a little bit of Patrick Bateman in American Psycho.
Which I haven't seen.
Especially, like, their workout scenes. American Psycho opens with Patrick going through a exhaustive list of his products he uses to maintain his physical appearance. And Travis isn't quite doing that, but he is monologuing over himself working out, talking about he needs to harden his body.
Right.
He's becoming too soft. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that's probably coming from his supposedly military background. It's kind of interesting how both movies, you know, one set in 76 and American Psycho, I think, is set in like 85 or 86. So in like the middle of each decade, how they're both reflections of a male at that point.
Right.
Like one, both in New York, one on Wall Street and one on a lower level, lower class, just, you know, as a taxi driver.
Right.
And how both of them are trying to ignore the obvious issues they have and focus only on their outward appearance.
Right.
Which I think is something that men do. Or what we can do, like focusing on, you know, Patrick Bateman is obsessed with his creams and hair care products.
But, right.
You know, and Travis is like lighting a, putting his forearm under, over a burner.
Right.
So slightly different.
Different, but, different avenues, but the but, same meaning behind
it. Yeah, this is a similar meaning that they're both trying to
exert control.
Yeah, yeah.
Over their like masculinity.
They're both trying to assert control and deal with what is going on in their heads that they either society's left them no avenues to explore or they just do it out of vanity.
Right. So going away from the movie for a second, just so you guys know, the voice you just heard is Toby, and she does our producing, Toby.
Hi, guys. Yep, I do our production, and I sit here and try to remind them to talk about certain things. So it's nice to meet everyone.
She also edits these things. Believe it or not, these things are about 4 hours long. She edits them down to 30 minutes. It's an impressive feat. You have idea how much nonsense goes on in these recordings.
Yeah, she definitely keeps us on task.
In between all these words, there's long pauses and lots of us.
Yes, lots and lots of those. Yeah, I think this week, both movies, it was more of a somber kind of feel. Yeah. But both movies just, and it was an accident that they both played into
each
other.
Yeah, we just happened to pick this.
Right, exactly. And it was neat to watch that. And like I said, I wouldn't say I'm crazy about Taxi Driver. Like, I may never watch it again. But I enjoyed the story part of it, the character-driven, getting to know the character with my friend Dahmer. It's a known person, but you get to know his character prior to what we all know about him. So I think they were both kind of very interesting in the fact of you have these movies that are portraying a man going through life and all of the situations that they encompass. And I think they both did it really well.
Yeah, agreed. So with March being Oscar month, and the Oscars being on March 27th, I believe, the Real Cinephiles Movie Club is going to be showing an Oscar-winning or nominated film on March 12th, Saturday at noon. Message us on Facebook, give us a call, or stop in. Make your choice. This month, the five choices are Midnight Cowboy from 1969, starring John Voight and Dustin Hoffman. Silence of the Lambs from 1991, starring Jodie Foster, Anthony Hopkins. Unforgiven, starring Clint Eastwood and Gene Hackman from 1992. The Shape of Water, starring Sally Hawkins from 2017. And Spencer from last year, which was sadly only given one nomination despite its clear worth of a Best Picture and Director and Script and Cinematography nomination. I kind of went on a rant there. But Spencer is a great movie, and I highly recommend it. And that's one of the choices. So there.
So five, they're all Oscar, nominated or winning?
So the Midnight Cowboy, Silence of the Lambs, Unforgiven, and Shape of Water all won Best Picture.
Okay.
Spencer was nominated for Best Actress.
Okay.
Pretty sure she's going to win because she killed it.
Well, this may come as a shocking surprise. I've never seen any of those. So
I was going to say, I thought you'd seen all of these.
No.
Aw.
Yeah, just a normal surprise.
You'd really like Shape of Water, I think.
I've heard that before. Somebody told me that. So maybe if I can, I'll come watch it. Who knows?
Whew.
I may grace you guys with my presence.
Oh, we should be so lucky.
And then, so Real Cinephiles coming up. And, of course, we'll come back with another episode of Real Opposites. But this time we're going to switch it up a little bit. We're actually going to have a guest on next podcast, but she's also here now. Olivia, say hi.
Hello. Hi.
So, Olivia also works here at the South Charleston Public Library with us. And you're journeying into watching movies, I think?
Very slowly. Okay. Very, very slowly.
So, you're kind of on my side a little bit, and the fact that we haven't seen a lot of movies, but you're trying to.
She has good taste.
Oh.
Unlike you, sadly, but.
Olivia is like Captain America, slowly getting up to date on all the pop culture references.
Yeah.
So me and Toby have been influencing her viewing choices.
I do believe I have an entire bookshelf now that's filled with movies because Josh has just kind of just passed them all to me.
So the idea is you're gonna come along for the next podcast. I think we're gonna recommend a movie to you, and you're gonna recommend a movie to us, and then we'll talk about that. So since we're obviously a podcast about movies, I know you're journeying into these new genres and you're watching all these new movies, but typically if you do watch a movie, what kind of movie is your favorite?
I really like musicals, and I'm a very musical kind of person. I like comedy. Comedy's really cool too. Most of the time when I watch things, it's usually more recent than not, but I've slowly started getting into like movies that are from before I was born. Oh, and as well as I grew up not watching rated R or anything really above PG-13. So I'm now starting to experience that side of movies, which is a lot more interesting than I thought it was going to be.
It's a whole new world.
It is a whole new world.
Well, it sounds like quite an adventure. I mean, going through these movies and watching, and even with the podcast, me getting into some of these movies, it is interesting. And I'm just not a movie person, but there's a lot out there to see. And Josh does a good job of breaking it down to me and showing there's so much more to a movie when you watch it. Because I've always said I prefer TV because of the story and the progression of character development and things like that. But I'm starting to see that sometimes in movies you do have that.
Yeah, I feel like in films you have more of an opportunity to express yourself in a more creative venue. It's less dependent on a runtime. It's just whatever the story needs.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, up until, you know, about 20 years ago with HBO, you just couldn't do stuff on TV. So, I mean, television's gotten better in certain respects. Like, they're more willing to explore different avenues.
Plus, Survivor's in its 42nd season. That's always a good thing.
Talk about Survivor on here.
Too much.
About as much as I talk about Crossroads, which, have you seen that?
Nope.
Oh, we just got to get a copy of it. We'll watch it.
Do we?
Add it to my ever-growing list.
Don't do that.
Oh, no.
So, Olivia, maybe one more question, unless I think of another one. So far, what is your favorite movie of all time?
Oh, please don't judge me. It's Phantom of the Opera, the one with Gerard Butler.
Never seen it.
I also have not seen it.
Gerard Butler.
See, don't judge me. I don't know these things.
Gerard Way is the lead singer of
I know what. I know they're both singers.
My Chemical Romance.
Have you seen Phantom of the Paradise though?
No, I have not.
It's a better movie.
I haven't seen
Phantom of the Opera.
No Phantom of the Opera?
I haven't seen it. Oh.
Isn't there like an old one and a new one?
Oh, well, yeah, there's the old one with Lon Chaney Jr.
Well, I'm assuming you'll see it. That's what I was asking.
Lon Chaney, sorry. But no, I haven't seen the Gerard Butler, Joel Schumacher film.
Oh, okay. Well, I've not seen either.
Well, I might have to catch up on this one.
Yeah. And, okay, so if that's your favorite, I lied. One more question.
Oh, no.
If that's your favorite of all time, what about into the new movies that you've been venturing in, Overrated R, or things like that? What would you say out of the new movies that you've been watching has been your favorite?
So far in the 6 or 7 new movies I've added to my small repertoire, it would have to be Dirty Dancing.
Okay.
Me and Toby got to watch that, and that was pretty...
I've seen that one.
That's a good movie. It's a really
very
good
popular,
movie.
Yeah.
Very
yeah.
popular.
Has
for
that
a good, for a good reason.
Has a lot of scenes that are very memorable, so...
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good one.
So this leads us into next month's podcast, where me and Aaron are going to pick a movie for Olivia to watch, and she is going to pick a movie that neither one of us have seen, I believe. So, Olivia, what is your choice?
Have you guys seen The Princess Bride? It's a brilliant movie.
I have not seen it. Is that Andre the Giant?
Yeah, it's Andre the Giant.
Because isn't there also like a princess movie with Anne Hathaway? And they made like 3 or 4
Diaries.
Yeah, I always get those confused.
Clearly, as you do.
I do all the time when people talk about it. So I've never seen it. Josh, most likely you've seen
Josh has seen Princess Diaries.
Did you just refer to yourself?
Pearson? Josh's favorite movie.
I'm like, Princess Bride, too many times to count. I watched a ton when I was a kid.
Well, now you gotta watch it again.
Sure, I'll watch it again. Any chance to watch Princess Bride's cool with me.
Or this time you gotta watch it backwards in reverse order. Like just
rewind it.
I'll re-edit the movie and do that.
Well, I haven't seen it, and I've always been told I should see it. Yes. And I like Andre the Giant.
It's a perfect movie.
I don't know who else is in it, but I'm sure they're good too. So that's what we'll be watching, I guess.
Yeah.
And we are going to have Olivia watch Scream.
Oh, no.
The original. The original. The
1996 Scream.
Yeah.
How did I know it was going to be a horror movie?
Yeah. So it's also funny, though. So
that's some comedic parts, yes.
Some great ones. It is one of my favorite movies of all time.
I think, wouldn't it be your favorite movie?
Yeah, I would say so.
There's no other movie you talk about as much except for Crossroads.
Yeah.
And if Crossroads is your favorite movie, we're just going to stop the podcast.
I don't think Crossroads even makes it into the top three. But, you know, it was her big, Britney's big venture out into the movie world. So it's good.
It's been crawling back into the music world.
That's right. But Scream is definitely, yeah, I would say it's probably my favorite movie.
Yeah.
I think those will be interesting movies for us to watch.
Yeah.
They're definitely different this time.
Very different, yeah.
So maybe not as somber next time around, but I think they'll be good watches for all of us.
Be prepared to memorize a quote. I will test you.
Oh, I have to know quotes.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to hear it like 47 times.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So well, that's good that because difficult. My notes usually consist of like 10 things, so I'll have to write down a quote because I will forget. So I'll be okay for Scream, though.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll be okay for Scream. I can give you many quotes off of that.
Most of them are going to be from Matthew Lillard.
Yes. That's where all the good stuff comes.
Oh, most of I thought it was like most of them were going to be just random screams that you can copy.
Oh, because it's called Scream.
I like how it took you a full second to understand.
Not only that, but how great would it be if next episode was just me screaming randomly as if I don't already. Throughout the whole podcast.
Clearly our least popular podcast.
All right, guys. So I guess that does it for us on this episode of Real Opposites. Next time we will see you with our special guest, Olivia. So for now, I'm Aaron.
I'm Josh.
And this has been Real Opposites.